This Day in Music Radio, documentaries. An in-depth look at some of the most important musicians in the history of music.
You are listening to part two of the story of Carmine Appice and Vanilla Fudge. Formed on Long Island in New York in 1966, the quartet comprised of Mark Steen, Vince Martell, Tim Bogert, and drummer Carmine Appice. The pioneering psychedelic outfit have been described as the forefathers of heavy metal rock. Here is musician and record label boss, Randy Pratt.
Music just kind of exploded. With that band, I thought it was like, all of a sudden it was 3D instead of 2D, you know, it was magnificent instead of kind of nice, you know. What was, I used to say about the Vanilla Fudge, the world will never be innocent enough to be that blown away again, you know. I mean, it's been so heavy for so long now, it's like that you can never blow people's minds like that again, you know, it's been done.
Here is former member of Blue Oyster Cult, Rainbow and Black Sabbath, drummer Bobby Rondinelli.
Carmine didn't start me, but he certainly inspired me when I saw him. You know, I guess the Beatles made me want to be a musician. And you know, I thought, you know, Ringo was pretty cool until I saw guys like Carmine. And you know, Ringo's still cool. But, you know, Carmine really made me, he was a big influence on me when I was a kid.
I heard that the Beatles approved of your cover versions.
They did. Actually, George Harrison, and I got this right from Paul McCartney. I asked him about it. I said, was it true that George Harrison used to carry the Vanilla Fudge album around all over London to parties and stuff? He said, definitely, definitely true.
Vanilla Fudge made two appearances on The Ed Sullivan Show. It was then America's most popular entertainment show. Billy Amendola.
The first time I heard about the Vanilla Fudge was on Ed Sullivan's show. I believe I was 10, 11 years old. And I saw Carmine twirling the stick. And I think that was the only opportunity that I had growing up to see a band was Ed Sullivan or maybe a variety show. We didn't have MTV or videos or anything like that, so to see someone on Ed Sullivan was a big thing. Yeah, I knew that he was something special from the first time I saw him. He played harder than anyone I have ever heard play before. He was a showman.
Here is Bobby Rondinelli.
Saw him on Ed Sullivan a few times, and then saw them at the Felt Forum headlining with Buddy Rich opening, and Buddy was insane, and Carmine came out on fire.
But you were a young boy at the time. Did you realize how good Carmine was even then?
Yeah, I mean, when you're a young kid, you know, if you see Mickey Mantle play baseball, you realize he's better than the other guy. So Carmine was like the Mickey Mantle of the drums back then. You know, most guys were going boom, bap, boom, boom, bap, and Carmine was doing all his stuff. And he took it to another level.
People Get Ready, the Curtis Mayfield song. Right. I know you're described as a progressive or a heavy rock outfit, but you're a soulful band as well. You're a soul guy.
All of us were soul guys. Vanilla Fudge sound was that, and which moved on to like Deep Purple and the heavy vibratos, which eventually came into the heavy metal. Everyone had that heavy vibrato because like we did it, and the Deep Purple got it from us, and you know, so-and-so got it from them, and then before you know it, it's down the line and it's Iron Maiden now. But we were basically R&B singers. People Got Ready was a message. It was a gospel-y kind of message, so we put the church organ to it, and you know, it starts off very soft and builds into this big orchestral kind of arrangement that had gospel sort of overtones to it.
Here is friend Rob Wallace of Hudson Music.
a real important band. The fusion of rock and kind of an R&B sound with a Hammond organ, to me, I was a big fan right away, you know, as soon as I had heard the band. You know, they kind of fused a little bit of the psychedelic, you know, vibe with some rock and some real, you know, kind of soulful playing, I thought. It was a, you know, real interesting combination.
His younger brother, Vinnie Appice.
All the stuff he played on the first Fudge album, that was great. It was like orchestrated. It wasn't, he used the kit not as just a drum kit, as 2 and 4. He used it as a kind of percussion section, you know? It was great stuff on there. So I would say that first album is definitely the coolest piece.
The follow-up album, The Beat Goes On, recorded in 1968, failed to make its mark.
What we had to do was what we did on the first album, again, to probably, you know, get another platinum record. But we listened to Ahmet Erdogan, who's supposed to know what he was doing, and Shadow Morton, who was supposed to know what he was doing. And they did this concept album, but there was no music on the record. It was all, you know, voices and time with Hitler and Black Power, and it was depressing. When it came out, people in the West Coast played the whole record. And people listening to it who had taken acid were going on bummer trips and calling a radio station, telling them to take it off. And before you know it, but, you know, it sold, went number 15, but it didn't stay there because it was, you know, a weird album. Well, they kept saying, you know, you'll be like the Beatles, you know. Everything was always like the Beatles. Mm. This is the best thing since the Beatles. And me, Tim, Phil were going, I don't know about this. This is weird. I don't know. This doesn't rock.
Phase 3.
When one nation's lifeline crosses another lifeline, the result is a noose for world peace.
Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. With thy blessing, we shall prevail.
Despite the album's failings, the band were having massive success.
At one point in time, I think it was in 68 when Hangin' On was released the second time, and we were touring with Jimi Hendrix, playing big arenas all around the country. We had 3 albums in the top 100, 2 of them in the top 20. So we had the first album like at number 18, Renaissance was like number 13, and Beat Goes On was number 80. And we had a single in the top 8, so that was great. If you had that now, forget about it. You'd huge.
Were you rich?
No, we weren't rich because the money wasn't really big yet. You know, I mean, we made decent money. Look, we made $1 million a year for a couple of years. And, you know, wasn't a millionaire, but hey, we had really pissed away a lot of money by wrecking hotels, by flying everywhere, by carrying the equipment, carrying the roadies on planes. I mean, nobody knew back then. My big money started when Led Zeppelin started. You know, before the promoter would make all the money. And then when Zeppelin came out, they said, no, you make 10%, we make 90%. And then it switched around. That's when all the big money started.
It was the era of sex, drugs, and rock and roll for the band.
Back in the day when there were lots of festivals going on and there was still a lot of LSD going around, somebody spiked the drinks backstage and we were playing the Seattle Pop Festival and everybody got dosed with acid. And I remember it was getting on to sunset and the sun was just beginning to set behind the hills. There's about 100,000 people or more out there. We were doing Eleanor Rigby and it hit. It hit us all very hard right about that time. And I remember Mark singing the song and starting to cry. And it was good acid too, I may add.
After a morning of walking and talking along the leafy streets of Brooklyn, I was invited to the Gibson Studios in Midtown Manhattan to talk about Carmine's drumming idols and to see the maestro himself at work.
So, as you can hear, behind the studio doors is one of the world's greatest drummers. I'm gonna go in and have a listen. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Carmine Appice.
Well, thank you all for coming.
It's a pleasure to be here in New York City with you, Carmine.
I was wondering what you were doing here.
So tell us about your early drumming influences here.
Well, I guess it was in like 1961, I got this album called Krupa and Rich. It was a drum battle. So those two guys, Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich, became my drumming idols right then because the album was amazing. You know, people now when I do interviews, they say, what was the first album you ever bought? They're expecting me to say like the Beatles or something. And I go, oh, Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich, you know. That album inspired me so much that I got a lot from each one of those guys. I got the fire and sort of viciousness from Buddy Rich, and I got a lot of the showmanship and melodic structures that I use from Gene Krupa.
Let's talk about Buddy Rich then. You got to play a little bit. What was it about his playing?
Buddy was just an animal. He was just so fast and fiery, and he just had some great, great hands and feet combinations, you know. He was just probably one of the fastest drummers ever, you know, with his hands and feet combinations and hands. Single rolls are ridiculous. And so pretty much, you know, I got a lot of that kind of stuff from him.
Can you play us a touch of that?
Sure.
There we go, Buddy Rich. Tell us about Gene Krupa then.
Gene Krupa was a lot slower of a drummer, but a lot of showmanship, a lot of stick twirling, a lot of body language. When he played, he put his whole heart and soul into it. When Buddy played, you know, he just sat there and it was just amazing, you know. He just sit there like a big, you know, animal. When Gene played, man, everything was moving. His arms, his shoulders, his head was bobbing around. And, you know, he became a sex idol. He became a pop star. He did all that stuff, which Buddy really didn't do. So between the both of them, you know, I came up with my thing. But also, there was a movie in the early 60s that was the Gene Krupa story. And when I seen that movie, I was really inspired. I bought the soundtrack album to that. I learned every note, every drum note, and every note pretty much on the album. When it ended up on TV, I used to video it. I actually own the DVD now, you know. So there's a lot of things that he did with the bands that I actually incorporated in some of my rock performances with different bands I used, you know.
Can you play us a bit of Gene?
Yeah.
So there we have Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich.
And there was one more called Max Roach. Yeah, one more, which is... Max Roach was the one that gave me all the weird combinations between the hand and feet that eventually turned into a lot of my rock drum fills, which eventually, you know, ended up on like Stairway to Heaven and things like that. And that all basically came from Max Roach.
So can you show us what Max did as well?
Right.
Well, you know, Carmine, I think that's ever so impressive. If we talk about the origins of what we now call, I suppose, you know, rock drumming, heavy metal drumming, or whatever you want to call it, what are the beginnings? What are the origins of that particular style of playing?
The drumming style of rock drumming, what we consider today's rock drumming, came from four different drumming guys in four different bands. Ginger Baker in the Cream, Mitch Mitchell from Jimi Hendrix, Keith Moon, and Vanilla Fudge with me. I used to beat the drum so bad that I would dent the heads and break cymbal stands. I'd break everything. And then I went into a pawn shop one day and I saw this 26 bass drum sitting up there for $5. I said, you know what? I'm going to buy that because a bigger drum, louder. So I bought this big 26 bass drum. I recovered it myself to match my Red Sparkle kit that I used on You Keep Me Hanging On. Now, on record, you can get away with making it sound bigger, you know, but live, it was the volume thing. There were no PA systems then, you know. I influenced John. And he told me I was his idol, you know, and that when I met him, I said, man, I love that triplet thing you do on Good Times, Bad Times. He goes, what do you mean? I got it from you. I said, man, I don't do that. He said, yeah, you did. You did it on the first album. I said, I did. What I did was I was the only one that played loud, really hard. Ginger Baker was a jazz drummer. Mitch played like a jazz drummer. He didn't play hard. And Keith just played crazy. His approach was mad, you know, like his life.
Rob Wallace.
You know, I loved his sound, the way his drums sounded on everything I've heard. I love that big, big open bass drum sound. His impact on John Bonham. John took Carmine's sound and put his kind of, you know, stamp on it. But I think the essence of it was Carmine's big open, you know, snare drum, tom-toms, and bass drum sound. You know, the John Bonham thing, I mean, I don't know if you could have a bigger disciple. I don't know what you'd call that person that kind of, certainly doesn't get any bigger than that. So, I mean, just that alone is you know, an incredibly, important in the whole lineage of you know, rock and roll music and rock and roll drumming.
Here is musician and singer with the Reformed Cactus, Jimmy Coons.
I was such a huge Led Zeppelin fanatic that, you know, then you backtrack and you go back and you see and you read all these things about how the only band that Led Zeppelin ever opened for was the Vanilla Fudge. And I know that Pagey and Robert Plant were huge Vanilla Fudge fans, and as well with the guys in Deep Purple and all of those iconic bands were, you know, the template was they were drawn from the Fudge and Vanilla Fudge.
Here is Bobby Rondinelli.
When I was a kid, there were only a few guys. There was Ginger Baker, Dino Danelli from the Rascals, and Carmine. And Carmine, for me, was the number one. And then other guys came in, like Bonham a little bit later, and Mitch Mitchell and people like that. But there wasn't many guys breaking ground. Not in rock, anyway.
Yeah. How influential do you think Carmine was then on what was to become heavy rock or progressive rock or whatever you call it?
Well, I know a lot of musicians say that, you know, the Vanilla Fudge was, a lot of famous musicians, Vanilla Fudge was groundbreaking as a whole band. You know what I mean? They took it to different places. They had dynamics. They had energy. They had really great ability. When other bands were just playing, like, pop songs, these guys were doing some crazy stuff, you know? And it still holds up. You listen to some of that old stuff, man, and it's just like, it still sounds great, you know?
Vanilla Fudge played alongside many of the great musical acts of all time, including The Doors, Mamas and Papas, Led Zeppelin, of course, and Jimi Hendrix. Here's Tim Bogert again.
It was very inspiring. They were amazing bands, and we would watch them and take the good points of their show and incorporate it into ours. We stole from everyone we saw, which I think is the best compliment you can give someone.
On bass, Mr. Noel Redding. On drums, Mr. Mitch Mitchell. On vocals and guitar, Mr. Jimi Hendrix, the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Hendrix, of course, was wonderful. I took a lot of stuff from him. Watched them all like a hawk. Eric used to let me sit behind Jimmy's amps during the show. And I would literally watch what he did and watch what worked and what impressed the crowd and then try to incorporate that into our show. Led Zeppelin was absolutely wonderful. They were very green at the time, and their first tour they were okay, and then they came back on their second tour and opened for us again, and then they were amazing. The transformation was like night and day. It was really quite amazing what they pulled off on the second tour. We did a show in somewhere around Oklahoma City. I'm not exactly sure where it was because, again, it's a very long time ago. Zeppelin was opening for us, and they literally spent the crowd. They were so good that they just wore the crowd out, and we realized that. So I went out and announced to the audience that there's no way in hell we can possibly follow this, so we're not going to try. And we brought all the fellas out from Led Zeppelin, and all of us jammed for the next hour and a half, and it went over really well. We always wondered who would be the first band to, quote, knock us off. Zeppelin.
for part two of the story of Carmine Appice and Vanilla Fudge at thisdayinmusic.com or download This Day in Music Radio on iTunes.
This Day in Music Radio. Documentaries. An in-depth look at some of the most important musicians in the history of music.
When we first started out, it was like we thought it might last at most 10 years. Tried to make me go
to rehab. It's just the truth is I have a soulful voice. It's all like done live. And I've kept it quite simple. Been dazed
and confused. I had Dazed and Confused. In the way that it's heard on the first album, that whole construction of it.
This Day in Music Radio. Documentaries.
For more information, go to thisdayinmusic.com.